Even more cold weather is on the way to western Montana. Good evening, I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne, and weather tops our news again tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capital reporter Dan Boyce tells us why the university system is looking at changing its student health insurance plan. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry previews a conference on organic farming. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with advocates of a living wage for Montana workers. If you think today was cold, just wait till this weekend. Meteorologist Jeff Kitzmiller says another Arctic front will arrive in western Montana Thursday night, bringing winds of 10 to 20 miles an hour in the valleys and even stronger in some of the canyons.
Temperatures are going to be 15 to 25 degrees below average, which pretty much equates to below zero in a lot of places overnight, single digits during the day, and that all adds up to negative 20 to negative 30 degrees in western Montana for wind chills.
Kitzmiller says the next few days will bring some of the coldest weather western Montana has seen in a long time.
And if we look at including today and the next, 9 days, this could potentially be a period where we have some of the coldest, overall average temperature than we've had in 40 years.
The new front may bring some light snow as well, but the biggest concern is the dropping temperature. Remember to bundle up kids waiting for the school bus and to make sure pets have adequate shelter from the cold.
And in other news from around the state, Cascade County officials have released the name of a 21-year-old woman who died in a four-vehicle crash near Great Falls as a winter storm blew into the state. Sheriff's Lieutenant Bob Rosapal tells the Great Falls Tribune that Chelsea Stanfield of Great Falls died at the scene of the crash just east of Manchester yesterday afternoon. Montana Highway Patrol Trooper Don Lee says Stanfield was driving too fast for road conditions and her sport utility vehicle went into a broadside skid, colliding with an oncoming SUV. A car that slowed as it approached the crash was rear-ended by another car and those two cars slid into the SUVs.
A search by air and on ground has resumed for a small plane piloted by a founder of a California software company that disappeared 2 days ago in the central Idaho backcountry. The single-engine Beach Bonanza piloted by Dale Smith lost contact with air traffic controllers Sunday near the tiny mountain town of Yellow Pine. An executive with Serial Tech, the San Jose, California company Smith co-founded in 2007, said Smith was flying from Baker City, Oregon to Butte. Passengers on the plane included Smith's son and daughter-in-law, Smith's daughter, and her fiancé. For now, the search is focused on an area near the backcountry airstrip just outside the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. Serial Tech co-founder Rand Creech says Smith was an experienced pilot.
A Montana judge under fire for commenting that a 14-year-old rape victim appeared older than her true age says he deserves to be censured but not removed from the bench for his remarks. District Judge G. Todd Baugh told the Associated Press today that his comments violated judicial rules that require him to promote public confidence in the courts. Baugh sent former teacher Stacey Rambold to prison in August for just 30 days for the rape of a student who later killed herself. Prosecutors appealed, contending Rambold should have served at least 4 years. Baugh says he was told by a member of the state judicial ethics panel that he would be recommended for censure in a complaint to the Montana Supreme Court. Such proceedings are confidential and the recommendation could not be immediately verified.
Montana's largest health insurers all say they won't extend policies that don't meet coverage requirements under the new federal health care law. Pacific Source and Assurant are joining Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana to say they won't extend policies that had already been canceled. President Barack Obama's administration previously announced it would allow insurers to extend coverage for another year for certain policies that don't meet the new requirements. Lee Newspapers of Montana reported that the state's three largest insurers are all deciding to cancel the plans. They say it is too late to change business plans for 2014 and that customers could benefit by the new plans and subsidies being offered on the exchange.
The Affordable Care Act is creating problems for the health insurance plan offered to students in the Montana university system. Public university students in the state need to have some kind of health insurance. For years, the university plan has offered a reasonably priced alternative for students not on their parents' plan. Capital reporter Dan Boyce tells us that may be in jeopardy.
The cafeteria at Helena College, a room packed with students of a variety of ages coming to the institution from any number of backgrounds. More than 70% of students here are classified as non-traditional.
I want to get my accounting degree.
39-year-old Susan Wenzel.
So that way I can help provide for the family.
She says she gets health insurance through her husband's job.
I never even thought of looking at the university plan because we like the plan, the business that my husband works for has.
And that's the case for most of the people enrolled here. Helena College Assistant Dean of Student Services, Elizabeth Stern-Sims, she says of the 1,600 students, only about 220 take the school's health insurance plan. And that number of enrollees is dropping.
It is decreasing every semester.
She says the cost of the university system plan has been going up consistently the last few years. The plan, it's in trouble. It's been around for 17 years. The university system contracts with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana to provide the plan. And for 16 of its 17 years, it was financially stable and a fair option for students, a lot cheaper than if they went to buy an individual plan on their own. Then came passage of the Affordable Care Act in 2010. Benefits Director at the University System, Connie Welsh.
And one of the things that came out of the Affordable Care Act was a change to permit students to remain on their parents' coverage through an employer up to age 26.
She says it's a good deal for students, but a lot of the younger ones are leaving the university plan. The total number has dropped almost 15% in the last year and a half. Meanwhile, the Great Recession has been causing more older Montanans to go back to school for new job training. So more of those who are joining the plan are older, less healthy individuals who cost more than they pay in.
It was kind of a perfect storm.
The plan has been losing money for the first time.
We weren't able to cover even claims, let alone any administrative cost.
Welsh says the university system is now looking at its options for student health insurance. It could start completely running its own insurance plan, stop contracting with a third party like Blue Cross Blue Shield. That could save money, but it's a big risk. The university system could decide not to even offer a plan, directing students to the Obamacare marketplace. Welsh says the option they most prefer is to keep the plan with Blue Cross and tweak it to stop losing money. To do that, some costs will have to go up even more than they have been.
As far as premiums, I think in overall, yes, the plan premium will have to go up.
Welsh says the Commissioner of Higher Education will be making decisions on what option is the best value for students around February of next year. I'm Dan Boyce, reporting at the Capitol.
The Montana Supreme Court has ruled in favor of the State Revenue Department in a dispute over how Bresnan Communications property is assessed for tax purposes. The decision increases the company's taxes by millions of dollars each year. District Judge Susan Waters ruled last year that Bresnan's properties should continue to be split between two tax classifications, a 3% rate for cable television services and a 6% rate for its telecommunication services. The Supreme Court overturned that ruling yesterday, saying Bresnan's businesses has evolved into a full telecommunication services company and should be taxed at a higher rate. Bresnan is now owned by Charter Communications. Spokeswoman Anita Lamont tells Lee Newspapers of Montana that the company is extremely disappointed. The ruling raises the company's taxes from $1.7 million to $7.3 million annually.
Cultivating organic seeds and genetically modified crops are among the topics farmers are meeting to discuss in the Flathead next week. The annual Montana Organic Association Conference is being held in the Flathead for the first time. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more with a longtime organic farmer on some of the conference's hot topics, as well about changes in farm-to-table efforts over the past three decades.
Judy Osowitz has been practicing organic farming in rural Whitefish for 36 years.
I've seen a lot of changes. I've seen a lot more demand for organic. I've seen a lot more supply of organic, which is a good thing. To have both, it's wonderful.
Osowitz mentions working with local food banks, as well as farm-to-school efforts that also have students growing, harvesting, and eating their own food.
And it's really important to, to get the kids eating healthy food and understanding that it can be grown in their backyard. Montana is a net importer. We used to be a net exporter of food. The Flathead had 48 dairies. We now have two.
One of those dairy farms is Kalispell Creamery. The other, owned by the Brenneman family, recently stopped production and will be closing up shop. Osowitz says organics stand out as a growing sector in the agriculture industry. Vegetables from Terrapin Farm are a staple at the weekly summertime farmers markets in Whitefish. Osowitz also cultivates plants for their seeds. There's a burgeoning effort to create local, organic seed sources.
One of our challenges here, as far as vegetable production goes, is we have short seasons. So we want to be developing seeds that work in our short seasons.
Osowitz says having an organic seed is important, as well as following organic practices while raising the crop. She says national standards require certified organic farmers to plant organic seed when available. Osowitz says the demand is growing, and the regulations are moving toward requiring all organic foods to be grown from organic seed.
I don't want to plant seeds that aren't organic. I don't want to plant a seed that's been chemically treated. I don't want to plant, a lot of the seed treatments are genes, they're genetics, genetically modified.
What Osowitz calls a Seed 202 class is part of the upcoming Montana Organic Association Conference at Flathead Valley Community College, December 12th through the 14th. It's looking at not just saving seeds, but adapting seeds and maintaining their genetic integrity. Genetically modified seeds and crops are also on the agenda. The conference is hosting an open-to-the-public kickoff documentary called GMO OMG. It will also feature a session with Montana State University Professor William Dyer in a lecture titled Biotechnology and Genetically Modified Crops, What's All the Fuss? As well as shop talk about organics, including best practices and certification. Katherine Fry reporting from the Flathead.
Authors of a new study say it clearly illustrates what so many Montanans already know, that there are precious few well-paying jobs in the state. What's more, for those that do exist, there's no shortage of people competing to be hired. The America's Changing Economy, Searching for Work That Pays in the New Low-Wage Job Market, was jointly issued by the Alliance for a Just Society and the Montana Organizing Project, two organizations working to address social, racial, and economic justice issues. In this evening's feature interview, Edward O'Brien speaks with MOP Director Gail Gutschy, State Representative Nancy Wilson, Women's Foundation of Montana Executive Director Jen Yule, Missoula County City Councilman Jason Weiner, and home health care worker Celeste Thompson about how low-wage work and the job gap. This report defines the job gap as a ratio of job seekers to living wage job openings. First, Gutschy opens the discussion by offering her explanation of a difference between the minimum wage and a living wage.
It's about half. Minimum wage is half what a living wage would be at this point. That's what we need to change.
What does it mean, living wage? What does that cover?
Well, it seems to me that if people have to end up working 2 to 3 jobs, that is not a living wage. If we want people to be able to work and have families and raise those families and support them, then we need to be able to pay them enough that they can work their 40 to 60 hours a week and survive on that, pay their rent, feed their children, have childcare for their children while they're gone, and educate their family.
Ms. Thompson, you work a minimum wage job right now, is that correct?
Yes, I do.
What sort of life is that?
Well, it's really hard. You can't pay bills. Most of our bills go into collection. We can't pay them, and it's really hard. I have education bills. My loans are in collection right now. Medical bills.
It sounds stressful.
Yeah, it is. It's very stressful.
And Ms. Yule, you say that this disproportionately women, in particular single women, mothers perhaps.
Yeah, certainly there's a disproportionate number of women represented in this wage gap that we're talking about who work in these low-wage jobs around the state. Of the women in that category, you know, the ones that we're most concerned about are those who are trying to support a family on a wage that is incapable of even supporting one person. And so especially when you're looking at single-parent families that are headed by women, what we're talking about is nearly half of those that live in poverty. I mean, what you're talking about is families that struggle to put food on the table, families who certainly are not paying their bills every month, families that keep their heat very low and try and wear warm clothes, you know, that basically do anything they can to make a little bit of money or to save a little bit of money in order to survive.
And Ms. Gutschy, this report takes a look at 5 different family types. What's the breakdown?
For a single adult looking for a job in Montana, there are 8 people vying for every job.
that qualifies as a living wage job. In a family of four with one working adult, the number increases to 58 job seekers for that one job with a living wage, not to be mistaken or confused with a minimum wage. And in this instance, this report announces that a living wage for a single adult is $13.82. But for an adult, and there's various stages, but it's somewhere in the $25 and above if you're an adult with children and another adult in the family who isn't working. So those jobs are not readily available in Montana. And that is the issue, and that is the reason for the report and the reason for the policymakers to talk with us about what might be done to remedy the situation. One thing we noted in the report is that Medicaid expansion would literally put more money in people's pockets. 70,000 Montanans would benefit from Medicaid expansion, and the reason it puts more money in their pockets is because they would be able to qualify for very low-cost health care or no-cost health care. And that's huge. And that's something that the legislature neglected to pass in the last session.
And we will get to that in just a second, but these wages, $13, $19, $27, $17 for both working parents, these wages are unheard of for, I think, so many Montanans. How could an employer afford to pay these kinds of wages? We have Jason Weiner, a Missoula City Councilman, who's sat in.
Yeah, what we're looking at are jobs that, by and large, aren't in the sectors that we currently see jobs being created in. These aren't service sector jobs that pay more than $20 an hour. What we're looking at are jobs that require people to be educated in specialized skill sets, to have a trade or some kind of knowledge of a technical skill, some sort of value added, the kinds of things that, honestly, two-year colleges and vocational training and things like that can provide to people. Those are educational services that at least were, in my impression, easier to access when I was in high school. I had the option to gain a trade instead of going on some sort of a college preparatory track. And these are the things that we lose when we cut education funding. There are things that get left on the table. So the kinds of jobs that this report calls out are the kinds of jobs that require public investment in education in order for people to earn.
This is a long-term issue then.
So whenever I think about what's possible in the present or the future, I simply look to the past first as a reference. And there are times in our recent history as a country when these weren't the problems that we had, where there weren't vast inequities, where there weren't huge gaps between the minimum wage and what people could afford and the wages that people could afford to live on. So that says to me that it is possible. We make choices as a country about the large-scale shape that our economy is going to take. We have chosen a path of maximum growth and minimum attention to equity. That's a choice that we made, and it's a choice that we could unmake, we could remake. And frankly, on the basis of the report, I think we need to remake.
Ms. Gushy mentioned Medicaid expansion, Representative Wilson, and the legislature has made itself quite clear. No way, because if that federal funding eventually dries up, Montanans are going to get stuck with that tab.
I don't honestly believe that the legislature made that quite clear. I believe that a few people in the legislature made that clear because they felt that Montana accepting Medicaid was going to break the federal government. I don't believe that's true. I believe that Montanans' taxes are now going to California and other states instead of to Montanans who thoroughly need them. I don't believe that us accepting Medicaid expansion in Montana was going to break the federal government. So that was the idea of a few, and they stopped that from being able to be voted on by many.
What would Medicaid expansion mean to so many Montana women, Ms. Yule?
Well, certainly medical care is one of the expenses that often goes unmet. And so for those families, it could mean a lot. I think there are a lot of other both policy initiatives and programs that we can look to make a difference in this area. And I think, what this report calls out for is just the beginning of a conversation about what that might look like and what are all the different tactics that we could be using to really make an impact in this area. Certainly Medicaid expansion is one of them, but I think there are many others as well.
In your eyes, what would you like to see happen, Ms. Wilson?
You know, I'm continuing to think about businesses that we have in this state that we're going to continue to have, which is the tourism industry. I hate to call out one industry. I'm going to say that it's of many industries, but tourism in itself doesn't bring high-paying jobs. So we have to decide as a state, what are we willing to subsidize to have those jobs in this state? And then how do we get the income from those jobs that are coming? We have to tax that business, or we have to tax the people using that business to be able to have the income to support the workers at a living wage. It's something that we really have to deal with. Is that a sales tax? I know that makes people very nervous. I don't think it's particularly a good idea. But there's something we need to encourage and extract from that industry enough to have the workers be able to have a living wage.
What would you say, Ms. Gucci, to people who say a minimum wage is meant for people who are just starting out? It's not meant to be a sustainable wage.
I would agree with that. It's not a sustainable wage, and perhaps when you're brand new in a job, especially if you're not very well educated, perhaps it's a starting point. It's not an ending point. And as Representative Wilson just pointed out, in Montana, the minimum wage at $7.80 is about half of what this report calculates as a living wage, which is about almost $14 for a single adult. So clearly, there are many possibilities for solutions here, and there are many policies that could be put in place. But in order for people to do the basics in life, that's pay for a house, either rent or mortgage, pay for your car, pay for your utilities, pay to put your kids in daycare, a minimum wage doesn't even come close. So clearly we need to talk about what it is that is a living wage, and that wage varies, but is clearly way more than minimum wage.
Yeah, I know the minimum wage goes up a dime at the beginning of the year.
A dime.
You know, the inflationary increases because of the Raise Montana initiative do make a difference on the margin to the people now, but what they do over the long term is they attempt to keep pace with the increasing costs of living. If the minimum wage had been indexed throughout its history, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now.
I'm still having a tough time figuring out how, if a worker at Burger King gets a $15 an hour salary, how the average person could afford a Whopper. That has to be paid for somehow.
Certainly, I would say that CEOs making 534 times what the workers are per hour should change. And sometimes that takes regulation to have happen. I think we need to encourage businesses to look at more than the bottom line. They need to look at society as a whole and how can we have a better society, and they are part of that. The wealthy in this country need to look at the broader good.
It's not as though the cost of a Whopper would go up in lockstep with the increase in the wages. There's large food costs, rent, fixed cost kinds of things that wouldn't change if labor costs increased. But, you know, again, to history as a reference, there was a time when there was no minimum wage at all, and somebody could have said, if you give that baker a dime an hour, how is anybody going to be able to afford a loaf of bread? And we seem to have surmounted that.
Jason Weiner, Gail Gucci, Jen Ewell, Nancy Wilson, thank you all so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide, there is a wind chill advisory in effect until 11 a.m. tomorrow, and that's for nearly all the valleys and canyons in western Montana. Tonight should be mostly cloudy with areas of snow and lows 4 below 0 to 3 above 0. Tomorrow calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow. High should be 7 to 14 degrees. Expect wind chill readings from 9 below 0 to 10 above 0 tomorrow. In central Montana, there is a winter storm warning in effect until 11 o'clock tonight. Expect snow with lows 10 below 0 to 0 degrees. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow through the day and highs 0 to 5 degrees above 0. In southwest Montana, there is a winter storm warning in effect until 11 o'clock tonight for elevations above 6,000 feet. Elevations below 6,000 feet have a winter weather advisory in effect, and that's also in effect until 11 p.m. Tonight should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow and lows 5 below to 15 below zero. Tomorrow, look for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of snow through the day, and highs should be 0 to 5 degrees above. And now for the editorial comments of Dan Gallagher.
This is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint. Black Friday interrupted our giving of thanks and the long lines of auto and human traffic on a consumer's feeding frenzy in the early evening of that holiday made a mockery of what's supposed to be a time of gratitude for all that we already have. Marketers manipulate America's social habits in order to put the blank ink on an accountant's ledger, that is, into a misnamed Friday the day before Thanksgiving. Then comes Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and the other marketing gimmicks, the goal of which is to fill the already rich pockets of America's money changers. But November remains, to me, a month of recognition and gratitude, recognition of our veterans' service and sacrifice, and gratitude for that, and for the land that has given us, from its earliest days of European discovery, a blessed nation that guarantees democracy for its people, a country striving to be worthy of the blood that's been shed in its name. Much of our history is covered in glory, but frankly, there are plenty of elements of American history that are shy of glory, that in fact are downright inglorious. It's been no small task carving out this nation, but overall the effort has been successful, something worthy of our thanks. That gratitude was expressed on Thanksgiving and at the Missoula Veterans Day ceremony. On November 22nd, we observed one of the sadder, more inglorious events of American history, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in 1963. This young president, who made us believe in ourselves and gave us hope that peace was possible, was also a decorated veteran of war who continued serving his country all the way to a Dallas, Texas street on a tragic day 50 years ago. Now, November transitions into December, and for me, December is primarily about the season of Christmas. And when I'm in my veterans mode and I think of Christmas, my thoughts lead me to the Christmas I spent in war and other historical Christmas stories that involve soldiers. My Christmas in Vietnam was almost surrealistic. We were on patrol in the Central Highlands jungle that day, wearing field packs and heavy helmets in 90-degree weather, wondering if it was snowing in Montana. Then as we walked through the brush, sound could be heard from above, but there was nothing divine about the source of that sound. It was a bird dog spotter plane flying low, playing Christmas music over a scratchy loudspeaker system. We were hearing Silent Night and Winter Wonderland as we stepped carefully to avoid tripwires and punji stakes, looking upward, not expecting to see angelic messengers, but to check the tree line for snipers and booby traps. It was bizarre. I guess the brass thought that this would cheer us up, but all it did was remind us of how far from home and our old reality we really were. The historical soldier has seen all sorts of Christmas drama, including the colonial soldiers of 1777-78 at Valley Forge, who sat in a frigid camp wondering if the cause they'd committed to might already be lost. They froze to death, they bled to death, and they suffered lasting wounds. In a Red Skelton skit in 1968, his colonial soldier wrote home to say that he was ready for death, if death don't expect too much. But they endured and prevailed and gave us a country. In 1864, just prior to Christmas, President Abraham Lincoln received a telegram from his commander in Georgia saying, "I beg to present to you as a Christmas gift the city of Savannah." The note came from General William Tecumseh Sherman, who believed that using whatever tactic was necessary to win the war in order to stop the killing was the most humane goal a military commander should have. And he accomplished his goal. At Christmas 1944, American GIs were surrounded at Bastogne, with Hitler's Wehrmacht surrounding them, demanding their surrender. General McAuliffe responded nuts to their surrender demand, and Patton's tanks lifted the siege, and the rest, as they say, is history. In Korea in 1950, the American Army and Marines were being pressured from their positions near the Chosin Reservoir on the Yalu River to the coast by hordes of Chinese soldiers. The GIs suffered, but they too endured. And now young Americans in uniform are in war, still another part of the world, as Christmas Day approaches in Afghanistan. Christmas Day, the day of peace on earth, will arrive, but the longed-for peace will not be there for them. Just one more example of the cost of war that's paid by American soldiers. There's a song, Christmas 1915, that talks of a Christmas truce in World War I between two small units, one British and one German, enemies of that war. As the Brits hear a young German soldier singing Silent Night in his native tongue, they move toward the melody that's so familiar. Then, for several hours, a soldier's truce prevails as these young enemies share wine and song and story. Then, as dawn arrives, the fighting between them resumes, and the German who sang so clearly is killed by one of the British soldiers who had found comfort in his music the night before. How tragic, how ironic, but this is what war is about, killing people that might otherwise be friends. And this is a burden that soldiers carry with them through life. The answer? Well, maybe let's just stop having wars. Merry Christmas, everybody. This is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint.
Dan Gallagher is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtb.org. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening.